The Abolition of Aging, the Forthcoming Radical Extension of Healthy Human Longevity. Written by David W. Wood. Read for you by the author. Dedication. In times past, visionaries marvelled at birds soaring high above them into the sky and wondered how humans might, one day, escape gravity in the same way. Other visionaries pondered tales of creatures that never grew old and wondered how, one day, these tales could become a reality. This book sets out the framework for how humanity might, at last, within a few short decades, become enabled to escape the vicious downward pull of aging. Accordingly, this book is dedicated to the researchers, engineers, entrepreneurs, and humanitarians who are wrestling with humanity's oldest challenge. May they receive ample support and inspiration to speed them, wisely and sure-footedly, on their audacious quest. Quotation from Richard Feynman in his 1964 lecture, The Role of Scientific Culture in Modern Society. Quote, "There is nothing in biology yet found that indicates the inevitability of death. This suggests to me that it is not at all inevitable, and it is only a matter of time before the biologists discover what it is that is causing us the trouble, and that terrible universal disease or temporariness of the human's body will be cured." End quote. Forward. Within our collective grasp dwells the remarkable possibility of the abolition of biological aging. It's a big if. But if we decide as a species to make this project a priority, there's around a 50% chance that practical rejuvenation therapies resulting in the comprehensive reversal of aging will be widely available as early as 2040. People everywhere, on the application of these treatments, will, if they wish, stop becoming biologically older. Instead, again if they wish, they'll start to become biologically younger, in both body and mind, as rejuvenation therapies take hold. In short, everyone will have the option to become ageless. The viewpoint I've just described is a position I've reached following extensive research carried out over more than 10 years. My research has led me to become a strong supporter of what can be called the Rejuveneering Project, a multi-decade cross-disciplinary endeavour to engineer human rejuvenation and thereby enable the choice to abolish aging. But when I mention this viewpoint to people that I meet, as part of my activity as a futurist, or when I catch up with my former colleagues from the smartphone industry, I frequently encounter one of two adverse reactions. First, people tell me it's not possible that such treatments are going to exist in any meaningful timescale anytime soon. In other words, they insist that human rejuvenation can't be done. It's wishful thinking to suppose otherwise, they say. It's bad science. It's naively over-optimistic. It's ignorant of the long history of failures in this field. The technical challenges remain overwhelmingly difficult. Second, people tell me that any such treatments would be socially destructive and morally indefensible. In other words, they insist that human rejuvenation shouldn't be done. It's essentially a selfish idea, they say, an idea with all kinds of undesirable consequences for societal harmony or planetary well-being. It's an arrogant idea from immature minds. It's an idea that deserves to be strangled. Can't be done, shouldn't be done. In this book, I will argue that both these objections are profoundly wrong. I'll argue instead that rejuvenation is a noble, highly desirable, eminently practical destiny for our species, a humanity plus destiny that could be achieved within just one human generation from now. As I see it, the abolition of aging is set to take its place on the upward arc of human social progress, echoing developments such as the abolition of slavery, the abolition of racism, and the abolition of poverty. It turns out that the can't, shouldn't objections are interlinked. They reinforce each other. It's often because someone thinks an effort is technically impossible that they object to any time or finance being applied to it. It would be better, they say, to apply these resources to other philanthropic causes where real progress is possible. That, allegedly, would be the moral, mature thing to do. Conversely, when someone's moral stance predisposes them to accept personal bodily decline and death, they become eager to find technical reasons that back up their decision. After all, it's human nature to tend to cherry-pick evidence that supports what we want to believe. A set of mutually reinforcing interlinked beliefs is sometimes called a paradigm. Our paradigms guide us, both consciously and unconsciously, in how we see the world and in the kinds of projects we deem to be worthwhile. Our paradigms filter our perceptions and constrain our imaginations. Changing paradigms is hard work. Just ask anyone who has tried to alter the opinions of others on contentious matters such as climate change, gun control, regulating the free market, or progressive taxation. Mere reason alone cannot unseat opinions on such topics. What to some observers is clear and compelling evidence for one position is hardly even noticed by someone entrenched in a competing paradigm. The inconvenient evidence is swatted away with little conscious thought. The paradigm that accepts human bodily decline and aging as somehow desirable has even deeper roots than the vexatious political topics mentioned in the previous paragraph. It's not going to be easy to dislodge that accepting aging paradigm. However, in the chapters ahead, I will marshal a wide range of considerations in favour of a different paradigm, the paradigm that heartily anticipates and endorses rejuvenation. I'll try to encourage listeners to see things from that anticipating rejuvenation paradigm. Section: Two Abolitions. Accepting aging can be compared to accepting slavery. For millennia, people from all social classes took slavery for granted. Thoughtful participants may have seen drawbacks with the system, but they assumed that there was no alternative to the basic fact of slavery. They could not conceive how society would function properly without slaves. Even the Bible takes slavery as a given. There is no Mosaic commandment which says, "Thou shalt not keep slaves." Nor is there anything in the New Testament that tells slave owners to set their slaves free. But in recent times, thank goodness, the public mind changed. The accepting slavery paradigm wilted in the face of a crescendo of opposing arguments. As with slavery, so also with aging. The time will come for its abolition. The public will cease to take aging for granted. They'll stop believing in spurious justifications for its inevitability. They'll demand better. They'll see how rejuvenation is ready to be embraced. One reason why slavery is so objectionable is the extent of its curtailment of human opportunity, the denial of free choice to the people enslaved. Another reason is that life expectancy of slaves frequently fell far short of the life expectancy of people not enslaved. As such, slavery can be counted as a major killer. It accelerated death. From the anticipating rejuvenation perspective, aging should be seen as the biggest killer of all. Compared to standard killers of the present day, such as drunken driving, terrorism, lead fumes, or other carcinogens, killers which rouse us to action to constrain them, aging destroys many more people. Globally, aging is the cause of at least two-thirds of human deaths. Aging is the awful elephant in the room, which we have collectively learned to ignore, but which we must learn to recognise and challenge anew. Every single week the Rejuvenating Project is delayed. Hundreds of thousands more people suffer and die worldwide due to ageing-related diseases. Advocates of rejuvenating see this ongoing situation as a needless slaughter. It's an intolerable offence against human potential. We ought, therefore, to be powerfully motivated to raise the probability of 50%, which I offered at the start of this foreword. A 50% chance of success with the Rejuvenating Project means, equally, a 50% chance of that project failing. That's a 50% chance of the human slaughter continuing. Section. Motivation. In the same way as we have become fervently motivated in recent decades to deal with the other killers mentioned above, vigorously campaigning against, for example, drunk drivers and emitters of noxious chemical pollutants, we ought to be even more motivated to deal with ageing. The anger that society has directed against tobacco companies for long obscuring the links between smoking and lung cancer ought to find a resonance in a new social passion to uncover and address links between biological ageing and numerous diseases. If it's right to seek to change behaviours and metabolism to cut down bad cholesterol, a precursor of heart disease, and concentrated glucose, a precursor of diabetes, it should be equally right to change behaviours and metabolism to cut down something that's a precursor of even more diseases, namely biological ageing. This is a discussion with enormous consequences. Changes in the public mood regarding the desirability of rejuvenating could trigger large reallocations of both public and private research expenditure. In turn, these reallocations are likely to have major implications in many areas of public well-being. Clearly, these decisions need to be taken wisely, with decisions being guided by a better understanding of the rich landscape of rejuvenating possibilities. An ongoing surge of motivation, wisely coordinated, is one of the factors which can assist the rejuvenating project to overcome the weighty challenges it faces. Challenges in science, technology, engineering, and human collaboration. Stubborn, unknown unknowns surely lie ahead too. Due to these complexities and unknowns, no one can be sure of the outcome of this project. Despite what some rejuvenation enthusiasts may suggest, there's nothing inevitable about the pace of future medical progress. That's why I give the probability of success as only around 50%. Although the end outcome remains unclear, the sense of discovery is increasing. The underlying scientific context is changing rapidly. Every day brings its own fresh fire hose of news of potential breakthrough medical approaches. In the midst of so much innovation, it behoves us to seek clarity on the bigger picture. To the extent that my book can provide that bigger picture, it will have met at least some of its goals. Armed with that bigger picture, listeners of this audiobook will hopefully be better placed to find the aspect of the overall rejuvenating project where they can make their best contributions. Together, we can tilt that 50% success probability upwards. The sooner, the better. Section. The discussion ahead. Chapter by chapter, here's how this book will unfold. Chapter 1, A Shocking Possibility, provides a fuller introduction to the subject of abolishing ageing. To set the scene, it draws upon contributions of great men of letters, the wartime poet Wilfred Owen, the mid-century poet Dylan Thomas, and the Scottish novelist Ian Banks. All three of these writers suffered premature deaths. Their examples help make the case that all deaths are premature. Chapter 2, Rejuvenating 101, poses and preemptively answers 25 questions that frequently interrupt any longer discussion of the possibility of human rejuvenation. This discussion is a necessary prerequisite to clear the way for the material in later chapters. Chapter 3, From Flight to Rejuvenation, looks at some aspects of human existence which were for centuries accepted as natural, much the same as aging is often regarded nowadays. For example, it was long held that powered flight through the air was unnatural and impossible, and that any attempt at it would be bound to fail. These opinions were eventually overturned faster than almost anyone expected. These reversals of opinion provide important learnings for the debate over human rejuvenation. Chapter 4, Rejuvenating Starting Points, advances arguments against any claim that rejuvenation is inherently impossible. Nature is the best mentor here. Nature is full of rejuvenation mechanisms, which human intervention has the potential to magnify and extend. Chapter 5, Scaling Up, takes that analysis one stage further. Suppose it turns out to be 1 million times harder to solve the engineering problems of human rejuvenation than it was to solve the engineering problems of powered flight. Would that mean it will take 1 million times as long to complete the first project compared to the second? The nature of exponential progress suggests otherwise. Provided suitable forms of collaboration can be arranged, the task can be completed in decades rather than millennia. Chapter 6, Collaborative Rejuvenating, reviews how that kind of productive cooperation is possible via changes in systems, tools, and processes, as well as changes in technology. In other words, larger numbers of contributors can fuel the arena of rejuvenation with exponential growth rather than a cacophony of disorganized, low-quality noise. Chapter 7, Runners and Riders, looks at the different approaches favoured by different rejuveneers and highlights what seem to be the most promising lines of research. Chapter 8, Changing Minds, explores the topic of clashing paradigms. Medical orthodoxy at different times has fiercely resisted change, for social and cultural reasons as much as for intellectual ones. Examples include opposition to improved hospital cleanliness and a continuing fondness for bloodletting. In these cases, it took painstaking efforts, often by comparative outsiders, to persuade mainstream medical practitioners to adopt a new paradigm. Chapter 9, Money Matters, continues the theme of paradigm change by providing a different kind of argument in favour of accelerating the rejuvenation project. This is an economic argument, featuring the concept of the longevity dividend. Chapter 10, Adverse Psychology, digs further into the factors behind objections to human rejuvenation. Once these factors are made clear, there's greater hope for everyone to take a more measured, reflective decision on whether the project deserves our collective support. Chapter 11, Towards Humanity Plus, describes in more detail how a world without human aging could operate. It's a world with many differences from our present one. The advent of that world will cause us to revise many aspects of our lifestyle. It will challenge some of our treasured thoughts and values. But it's a world where we can be profoundly happy to make our new homes. The positive changes will far outweigh the negative ones. As such, it's a world well worth fighting to bring into being as soon as possible. Chapter 12, Radical Alternatives, looks at some alternatives that may be considered by people who face the prospect of significant aging and death before comprehensive therapies for human rejuvenation become widely available. Chapter 13, Future Uncertain, Takes Stock. It lists key unknowns that still remain unanswered. It also proposes a course of action to resolve these unknowns in the most effective manner. Section. Author's Note. When rejuvenating is tabled for discussion, many emotions come to the surface. Feelings that have long been suppressed may swell up with surprising force. Nevertheless, I'll do what I can to maintain an even keel in the chapters that follow. The pages ahead mix detail with context. The context includes analogies and comparisons. Alongside the details of specific medical topics, I discuss various non-medical engineering problems, which were, at one time, viewed as equally intractable and unsolvable as aging. The fact that these other problems have been, or are being solved, adds extra weight to the idea that rejuvenation likewise lies within our grasp. Analogical reasoning has, of course, its own limitations. History is more likely to rhyme than to repeat. But analogies can also be the catalyst for important new insight. I'll leave it to listeners to determine whether the analogies in this book live up to that potential. One of the themes that run throughout this book is the importance of better systems to enable more sophisticated collaborations between diverse supporters of rejuvenating. We need systems that allow the best ideas and the best techniques to become widely appreciated, regardless of their origin. As part of a commitment to a better conversation among writers who have important things to say on the subject of rejuvenating, and who say it well, I frequently quote sentences and paragraphs from different writers in the pages that follow. I'll mark these sections clearly by starting with the word quote and finishing them by saying end quote. In all such cases, I have provided links to the original articles in the footnotes section of the website for this book. Therefore, interested readers can look in more detail at the work of these writers and their publications. Any writers who I have quoted, but who think I have misrepresented or misunderstood their ideas, are welcome to get in touch with me so I can make amends and the conversation can improve. The book's website, theabolitionofaging.com, contains additional pointers to the fast-evolving online discussion of topics raised in these conversations. After all, I could only include in this book a small fraction of the material that I originally thought should be covered. And if I am right that the whole field of rejuvenating is undergoing an exponential increase, the online discussion is poised to grow and grow. Please let me know via that website your own thoughts about which areas deserve greater attention.